Welcome back, pod people, to a new episode of Cinema D'Amore. We're connecting one last time with Denis Villeneuve. I have no idea how to say his name.
Sure.
Probably important thing to do before you start the episode, but this is, if you are an avid listener, this is what you expect from us. Yeah. This is what we do.
We don't say names, right?
I definitely don't. Maybe maybe one day I will. But you know what? That actually kind of ties into this movie heavily. Language and communication. And do we have those skills? And what do those skills bring us? That's all part of this movie. So this might be the ultimate movie of connection, yeah. Period. This is the grand finale of our theme. But yeah, I'm Justin Morgan. I'll be your host, and I'm here with
Chuck Phillips.
And we are a podcast. That's it. That's all I got.
That's all we're going to talk about.
Every time I watch this movie, which maybe I've watched five times now.
This is only the second time I've watched it. I don't think I've watched it since it came out.
Well, I remember seeing it in theaters with Chris, and like it clicked like halfway through the movie what was going on, and he just looked so confused. And at the end, when they were literally like, you couldn't be confused because they were just flat out telling you things, he was like trying to explain to me. I'm like, Chris, I got it a good bit ago. We're good. But yeah, it's just something like the second viewing, it ends up being, I won't say better, but it does kind of have that sixth sense type of thing. When you go back and watch the second time, you're like, it does follow its own rules very well. In fact, It straight up tells you what's going on, I think, in the very first 2 minutes of the movie during the opening narration.
Yeah, basically.
Not even basically, like literally. Like you're told that there's not really a beginning. There's not really an ending. But it just sounds like philosophical, so you ignore it.
Yeah. But, I like how this, I guess you can approach this movie just the way it approaches time. We can jump into any part there. But I do like how this movie plays with the non-linear storytelling, but it doesn't feel like a gimmicky way. Like they really work it into the plot very well. And yeah, the way it sets up at the very beginning that, you know, like this is a part of her past, the child that she sees grow up and pass away, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, they're setting up that like her kid died, I get it. And then yeah, you keep watching the movie, and the whole time, yeah, she keeps having like these flashbacks, and then you're like I get it, she's thinking about her kid that died, I get it. And then like that, there's that moment, yeah, I think the time when it really hits you, or at least when I always think that it hits me, is like when the daughter asks for that term. Oh, it's the obvious point where they're definitely making it known that there's a connection or something, that's something weird with time, when the daughter asks for the term and she's like, I don't know, go ask your dad if you want science. And then he gives her the exact term that she needs, and it flashes to that. And it's, I don't know. I do just like the way it plays with that. It doesn't feel, like I said, it doesn't feel gimmicky. It feels very natural the way they blend it into this plot.
Yeah, I mean, those are the two biggest themes of this film, is time, the concept of time, and communication, how we just talk to each other and convey ideas. And I really think that they did a great job with Amy Adams, who is this, like, she teaches language, linguistics. Yeah, and just, like, how they're using her because of convenience and skill in this film to be able to communicate with aliens that have just landed. And I feel like her approach comes off as realistic, and it doesn't come off as she's hyper intelligent, she knows more than everyone else. And the plot does a really good job with, like, Forrest Whitaker is in charge of this the military side of this operation to communicate with this ship or whatever it is that has landed in Montana. And he always asks the most simple questions, but he always takes it, you know, on point, very direct. When he's just sort of like, why are we starting like so basic? And she basically sets up, they have to understand what these things mean, or else there's going to be some sort of miscommunication, which happens very early on in the film, where it's considering something a weapon, and she knows that they don't actually mean like a destructive weapon. And the way that they're kind of building off of the people they're reacting with, there's like 12 different sites across the world. She said, you know, they're going to work how you work. So if you decide to play chess, it's going to be a competition. And that's like, we don't really get to see what's going on 100% with China, but you know, they got their trigger using finger.
Mahjong tiles. That's how they set up. They use symbols like for Mahjong tiles to communicate, and yeah, there's only a win-lose scenario if you play games.
Yeah, and I mean, I do like the scenario too, where the movie has a really good point, I think, about our countries, how there's always that competition, and this film kind of starts with like, who's going to be the one that solves this problem first? And there's no communication with each other. I mean, there is on a like a superficial way when it first starts. They're talking to all the countries. But then as the film goes on, they start getting divided and literally getting disconnected. Like, literally disconnected is as disconnected. And I just think that is kind of simplistic, but also clever. Because, I mean, the aliens get to a point where whenever they're communicating, they say that, like, you guys have to work together to figure out what we're trying to ask you. And it kind of, like, forces us to be together. Which I also kind of, like the implications of what of a future Earth might be if all the nations start working together and aren't so separate. It's a little bit more romantic, I guess, in that sort of sense.
Yeah, he uses that's kind of the same plot that Ozymandias uses in Watchmen. That's his whole plan, is to make a threat so big that all the countries would have to unite together to end the Cold War. You know, so it's a tried and true solution to world problems is. Just find something that they can all agree to be against.
It's threatening somewhat. It's like another favorite aspect I have of this movie is where they bring the canary with them, and the canary in the coal mine, if that bird dies, they know that they can't breathe. And there's a lot of tense moments with the aliens that they do a lot of cutting to this bird. To build the tension to be like, you expect this thing to possibly drop dead. And then they make these, are they hepapods? Is that what they were?
Yeah, heptapod.
Heptapods. They're kind of disturbing looking. They don't really have like a face that you can see. But I think the big tentacles and stuff, they remind me of the aliens from The Simpsons a bit. I think especially because there's two of them.
Yeah.
But they're really kind of off-putting in the way that they look. They do have them like in this atmospheric like mist on their side, so they're like a little bit harder to see. But yeah, it's kind of like you don't know the point of why they're there. And we've watched enough movies where it's an alien invasion is not a good thing. The last big movie where ships started floating over things, I think, was Independence Day, and it just blew up everything. But it's like, what if the people on top of the building that were like, come get us, were the ones that were correct? That's Arrival somewhat.
Yeah there's I do like the little snippets we get of the news coming from like different countries, and then as you start to see, there's kind of like the Alex Jones type, like Fox News that the soldiers listen to, and those are the people that are saying like, oh, you know, even though these things haven't threatened to do anything, and They recount that, you know, they're not destroying the land. They like literally don't even affect the land that they sit on top of. Like they don't even displace any land. They just sit there. But you have like these types that are like, oh, we need to start firing at them. We need to show them who's boss. Like even though they've not threatened, they haven't done anything to make.
They don't even ruin the ecosystem. Like yeah, there's yeah, nothing.
They're not doing anything, but just those types that are just paranoid that as soon as they see something new, you know, that they want to destroy everything, that they're scared of it. So I like that we get those every once in a while that kind of give us those little bits of information about what's going on. I enjoy their theory as well about why they landed in the sites that they landed in. We get that like halfway through from Jeremy Renner's character. That's like, I don't know. Sheena Easton had a hit in all these locations in 1980. Maybe that's why they landed there.
Yeah, that's his like dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy. I mean that, and I kind of do like the Slaughterhouse Five vibes that this film has like towards the end.
Yeah.
Or I guess starting like halfway through. And I don't think it's that hard to understand. I could see people being confused if they went into this movie and they were not fully paying attention. Any sort of distractions at all would ruin this movie for you, I feel. But something about it is also really exciting with the way that they start learning the language and start learning how to communicate with them. And there is this thing where Jeremy Renner talks about how you essentially dream in the language that you speak. And if you speak a different language, you think differently. And when you learn a new language, your brain starts to get rewired the way you think. And that's actually kind of interesting because me and you are both learning languages right now, different languages, and that's exactly how I feel. Because it started teaching me in a way that I wouldn't have thought to learn the language. Like, it started teaching me symbols and sounds. Then it started combining them. Instead of when I took Spanish in middle school, it was, I mean, some of the words are a little bit closer. But it would be like, you know, Blanco, white, you know, like they teach you these things immediately with the English word. Yeah. And I feel like the way that I'm learning in this program, I'm learning Japanese and Chuck's learning Spanish, by the way. But the way that that I'm experiencing it is that they didn't start by things that I've learned some numbers. I learned some colors. But I think it was because it was trying to teach me the basic sounds first and what the basic symbols were first. And things are starting to get more complex. The sentences are harder for me to grasp, but I'm getting along, getting used to it. And in this movie, they have that concept of how complicated their written language is with these aliens. And how they basically have to have the entire idea thought out before they even start to say their idea or put their idea out there, I guess. And it's very intricate. And they talk about how, you know, it has to, it's nonlinear in the way that they write, nonlinear in the way that we find out that they live. And they essentially have this gift that they're, you know, trying to offer us in exchange for help that they're going to need in 3,000 years, I believe they said.
Yeah. Yeah, this is probably, I don't want to say, like, I've seen a lot of alien movies, but this may be the only...
That's how you should have started this.
That's how I started. I've seen a lot of alien movies in my time. But I enjoy the way that they come up with, like, an interesting way of communicating. Other than it's kind of like the same thing of any shows where, you know, like you watch Star Trek or Star Wars or something like that, or any of those kind of shows. And it's like in the future, everyone just still speaks English. Like, mm-hmm. Even the aliens speak English. or some of the movies where they come up with, like, they just decipher their language super quick. They just have a computer that are like, we figured out how to speak their language, and, you know, we can make the computer do it. So I enjoy the realism that this goes into to show you what it would be like trying to communicate with someone that doesn't write or speak in the same way. And
What do you think is the closest, like Close Encounters or something?
Close Encounters is the other one I think of when I put both of these movies together in like a unique and interesting way of how could you get characters to speak when they would have nothing in common whatsoever. And like that film uses a universal thing like music that everybody knows what musical tones are. Even, you know, I guess even in outer space, you would still know.
Even aliens know
what music is. They know what, you know, note tones are, because sounds just come out the same when you plug them through something like
that. I mean, what if aliens couldn't hear, you know?
Yeah, if you had deaf aliens. I mean, it could happen. Whether we've had blind aliens, that's been like, that's like a plot point in a bunch of sci-fi movies that they're.
Hey, that's what I just watched right before these ones. I watched Quiet Place 1 and 2.
That's the plot of that. That's the plot of, That's like something weird with like that new Chris Pratt one. They have some sort of weird thing that like they can't hear or something like that. They have a weird thing too, but that you do get that in some movies. But yeah, I enjoyed that this
in the Tomorrow War they can't hear, and then in the Quiet Place they hear too well.
Yeah, that's your problem. So I just enjoy something like this where it really does show the work. Like I don't know, this movie could come off as boring, but I think the Denis Villeneuve, the director, I don't know, he's just really good at making even this kind of like seemingly tedious things of sitting there and transcribing symbols. Like he makes you really care about these characters.
Think about the first 30 minutes. They haven't even seen, that's like building up to the first interaction with aliens. And beyond the first couple minutes of Amy Adams explaining her, where she's coming from, it's all tense. And I don't think that it's, you know, I think it's intentional, but it looks a lot like 2001 A Space Odyssey. And I think it builds up in the same way as when they're on the moon and they're going to see the monolith for the first time. Like, not even just the visuals of having, you know, spacesuits, or in this case, like the hazmat suits, but just like how nervous they are. And Amy Adams, especially, she's not trained for any of that type of stuff. So like going through the zero gravity or not acclimating well to just having to breathe through an oxygen tank is something kind of like scary and exciting for her at the same time. I don't know.
She's an anti-masker. She can't communicate with these masks on.
The music's really good too, which is that, isn't that Johan Johansson? It's like one of his last ones.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I don't know when.
He was supposed to do Blade Runner, and then he got axed for like Hans Zimmer or something.
This might have been his last one. Yeah, I don't know.
This was his last one with Villeneuve.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is pretty good. Like I said, I haven't watched his movie since it first came out. And I don't know, this might be my favorite of his movies. Like I've enjoyed all of them. I think they're all really good in their own way, but I don't know, this might be the most like emotionally, like this might be the one that you connect with the most. A lot of the other ones are, Prisoners is just, I don't know, very depressing and upsetting for almost the entire movie.
It's like grieving. There's nothing, is the main point of that film.
There's nothing happy in that film. Blade Runner 2049 is like but Blade Runner is like a good exercise in like, I don't know, carrying the plot idea from the first film into this century, and I think he does a pretty good job with that. Sicario's good, but I don't know, this one I think
you kind of have his first like sci-fi film with this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could say Enemy, but I think of Enemy more as like
it's more a psychological movie.
Yeah, that or not necessarily like a mystery. Like you're trying to figure something out.
Yeah, I don't consider that. But then as much sci-fi.
He did Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, and now he's doing Dune. Yeah. So he's stuck in science fiction.
He's really deep in the sci-fi.
And you know what? It's good, like, good for him too, because he is one of the more exciting directors. Like, every movie that you mentioned, I don't think I ever saw his first movie, whatever he made before Enemy.
No, but, yeah, Enemy's the earliest one I've seen of his.
But they're all really good. And we discussed Enemy, and I think more people had a kind of a problem with the way that the plot is. It's a little bit more complicated and a little bit more ambiguous. This starts complicated, but I don't think it ends that way. I think it's pretty straightforward with what's going on, about it not being straightforward. The concept is out there, very easy for you to figure it out by the end of the movie. But I think it was also exciting. Not when I went to go see this movie, it's another one of those situations where I didn't have any sort of expectations when I went into the movie. It kind of looks generic, and I didn't really take his name into mind yet. I wasn't like, oh, the guy that did Prisoners. Because at that point, I think I saw Enemy and I saw Prisoners and Sicario. I would have seen too.
But, I think at that point, all I would have seen was Prisoners, because I didn't see Enemy till you showed it to me, and I didn't see Sicario when it first came out.
Yeah, but I think I saw that in theaters. I didn't see Prisoners in theaters, and I didn't see Enemy in theaters. If it was, but I'm still kind of striking out and seeing anything in theaters. I wanted to see The Green Knight, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't get around to that. The only thing I've seen in theaters so far was Fast 9. The only thing I've seen in theaters. Everything else has been coming out, Suicide Squad, and still haven't watched Black Widow or Jungle Cruise. At this point, it's like, it'll probably go to...
I do want to see them, but it'll be free, like,
pretty soon at this point.
Well, like, Spiral I wanted to see, and A Quiet Place Part 2 I wanted to see, and I saw both of them on home video within the last week.
Yeah.
And I really did. A Quiet Place made me laugh, because I remember as I saw Invisible Man, I was like, oh, sweet, next weekend is A Quiet Place too. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to see that next week.
And it just
never I did came the math. Out. I did the math. No, I did the math by, like, I plugged it into Google.
Yeah.
73 weeks later, I watched the movie, and I still haven't been in a theater. That's just wild. I think the longest I've ever went not being in a theater is like 5 weeks for like my natural lifetime of when I became addicted to movies. And
the funny thing too, with like waiting for these movies to come out, which, you know, we're getting Dune later this year, or was it pushed back to next year? Or is it just like really late this year?
At this point, it's October.
October. Yeah. Cause I know that's been another one that's going to be on HBO, which everyone's, you know, fighting about the stuff going straight to video instead of that. But one funny thing with the pandemic and things getting pushed back, the time releases for when these films were supposed to come out sometimes like makes it really weird. Like the new Boss Baby, they put it on Peacock like 3 weeks ago, and I watched it, and it's everything takes place at Christmas time, and I had to sit there and go, was this movie supposed to be released at Christmas of 2020? Like, this is all like the whole thing, like, is like, you know, hey, everyone come over for Christmas presents, but this movie's being released in July. And I'm just like, okay, that's a weird time to drop this movie. But it's, I guess, funny, it was originally though, you're probably supposed to be Christmas.
I mean, you're probably right. One of the first movies I worked on was Love the Coopers, which was this Christmas movie with all these like big name stars. And it didn't do that hot in the box office because, I don't know, people just, they were trying to be like a Love Actually or some, I don't know. People didn't care. Yeah. And 2 months later, they had it come out on Blu-ray, and I love the cover of it because it's like in a heart, and they basically cut out anything that looks like Christmas.
Yeah.
So now it looks like a Valentine's Day movie, and like it's about them all connecting because they love each other, and it's like, you're gonna put this in and it's gonna be a Christmas movie. And
are you telling me you worked on a movie that was all about people connecting, and that's not, and we're talking about Arrival instead of Love the Coopers?
Actually, the movie really was not about connecting.
Okay.
It doesn't really end with them. It does have Timothy Chalamet in it, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's our connection.
And Olivia Wilde. It connects to, there's so many people in this, in that movie.
Yeah.
there's a shit ton in that movie. But yeah, this movie just in general, I like the way that it plays out with, like, the military doesn't seem too over the top. And you get a lot of those sci-fi movies where the military is like a 10. You just have the character from Apocalypse Now that loves the smell of napalm in the morning because they just like blowing things up and that's what they get off on.
Yeah.
Or I think of somebody that's like intelligent that doesn't work and that or didn't work for me is something like Tom Hanks in Da Vinci Code. He was like too smart. But then there were things he didn't get. And I'm like, well, that now he seems too dumb. Like, what character, what do you want him? He was figuring out things like off the top of his head, and it was just like too much.
Yeah. I do. I think because we only get Forrest Whitaker, and then he has a couple guys working with him, and then we get, God, I can never remember that guy's name that plays, I don't know. I don't even know what his position's supposed to be like.
The guy from Ready or Not?
Yeah, yeah. That I can never remember his name, but even, like, he seems like he'd be the character that'd be, like, over the top, being like, no, you're out of line, like, yelling and stuff like that. But even he's, like, he plays it, like, really naturally, and everything he comes back with doesn't just sound stupid, like, when she says, you don't understand, we all just need to communicate with each other, like, he could have just played it and been like, they're like, you're out of line. We get out of here. I'm going to have you locked up or something like that. But he literally just is like, I don't know if you've noticed, but all the computers are disconnected. Like, we literally would have to drive to their borders and hand them the information if we wanted to talk to them. Like, we can't.
Yeah.
We physically can't do it right now. We couldn't get there fast enough.
Well, like, recently, I don't know if you watched it yet, but I watched Spiral. And it does one of those things where, like, all the characters are, like, a 10 at being angry. And I'm like, why are you so angry? Like, every character is just screaming and angry. And I'm like, bring it down a notch. Like, you're making it, like, too, it's, like, overly intense. It feels like a cartoon almost at this point. Yeah, all the characters play very subtle. Like, even Forrest Whitaker, you know that he's, like, speaking to his superiors. And they're putting a lot of pressure on him. But you never see it. The perspective almost never leaves Amy Adams. I think you're right. It follows her the whole time. If there is a moment without her in frame, I can't really think about it.
Like, it's only like 1 second.
Well, like, they have a few where it's like when the spaceship lifts off the ground higher where they can't reach it with a scissor lift anymore, and it sends that pod down to pick her up. It does have that perspective of them being like, where is she, what is she doing, and it's far away, but they also quickly go back to her perspective of like getting in there. And I don't know, I think if it came to something like that where you're like on the verge of some new discovery, I think I would take the risk and be like, if I die, I die. Because at the same time, it's like, you're going to experience something that you're never, I mean, even it's death, you're going to experience something that nobody else has experienced up until that point. But I think, like, just the idea, too, of when she starts to, the way they start learning the language, and time does, it takes like a month before they really start cracking down on the language. And I think that's when you get the big, like, conspiracy theory, like, podcast-type situation, that type of stuff. But they are really kind of subtle. I think it's just, like, a line that Jeremy Renner says, like, oh, after a month, this is what we learned.
Yeah.
And I think that is kind of, like, could you imagine the things just be floating from outer space for, like, a month, and that's all you heard about? Like, we still don't know what they're up to or what they're learning. And I guess going through this whole pandemic, we're still going through it. It really made me think about when she like takes her suit off, like she's like they have to see me.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because they're getting confused because they can't tell the difference between the humans when they all look like these people in orange suits, you know. And they even show like from her point of view, which I think is really kind of funny. it's that really like obscure through the plastic where like her vision's like even obscure. And my thought was like, you think they would give them something that they could see out of better than that. But at the same time, I think it works in the opposite way where it's like, it probably makes them, their faces like harder to distinguish and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that something else that I thought of while watching this movie, just that idea, not going in the sci-fi direction, but there's something very unique. And again, yeah, like you brought up, we're learning, you know, different languages, and you know, that can be a little, can be a little tricky and confusing. But I always like films that kind of deal with that, like that kind of lost in translation, like difficulties. I don't know, Babel is like a movie that I always think of. Like, it's not the best movie, but I think it's like, it's a very interesting movie in the concept.
It's a good concept movie.
It's a good concept movie that I just think wasn't, he didn't quite nail it as well as he could.
Not as good as Birdman.
It's not. It's not. It's like a weird one, like right in the middle that I just not as good as the other ones. But I still think it's like a really good look at like that idea of just people not being able to communicate, and like it coming down from like that very, the ancient myth of the Tower of Babel. That's like, oh yeah, in ancient history, you know, everyone spoke the same language, and they tried to build a tower to climb up to the gods, and then the gods struck them down and made everyone speak different languages so that they couldn't work together again, which, you know, is basically, I guess, kind of what feeds into this idea.
I mean, you gotta have a reason why we don't speak the same languages.
There has to be a reason why everyone speaks differently. And I get, you know, that kind of leads into the point of this film, is that everyone is separated by that communication barrier. They can't just easily talk to each other and make everything work. And the way they solve that conflict, though, how she starts perceiving time differently and using the weapon, as they say it is, to be able to like go into the future and see things, when she has that moment with the Chinese general, which is like a great like finale, like final moment there of, you know, he shows her, you know, his private cell phone number and tells her the information she needs, and was like, I don't know, I think this is something you probably need, and she's very confused, and then that's when it like finally clicks in her head of like what she needs to do. I like the way.
I mean, to a degree, she already knows, because like when she's flipping through the book that she wrote in the future, and Jeremy Renner's like trying to speak to her, she's like, give me a moment. And you know, she probably looks like a crazy person as she's flipping through nothing in front of him. And he's just like, all right, we'll let it go.
Yeah.
And Renner's a little bit of a romantic too, where he has that line about, he thought the most exciting thing was going to be meeting aliens, but it was actually meeting her. I'm like, oh, Jeremy Renner.
Yeah. That throwing that classic Hollywood romance at you.
Yeah, I do like how there's not a lot of focus on him most of the time, too. Even when he's comforting her, the shots are mostly on her, and he'll be obscure, like, off to the side. So, like, yeah, the focus is never on him. And I do like the concept that this movie has towards the end, too, of, you know, do you still do something if you know that not every part of it's going to be great. And I think that's kind of like the most emotional part of this movie that stands out from the rest, is that she, from living in the future and the past, in this nonlinear time, she not only just like learning and spreading this gift that the aliens bring, but the gift lets her know that she's essentially going to have a child, and the child's going to get a rare disease that nobody can solve. Or it's not meant to be solved, I guess. And it's like, do you continue to go through with it, knowing that information? Because I feel like she could have made the choice to just not be with him and to not have a kid, to not have to go through that heartache. But I guess also when you're living nonlinear, you can keep reliving those moments. So I don't know how old that girl ends up being, like 12 or something.
Looks like, yeah, she's like teenager maybe.
So it's a sort of like, it's this like weird time where it's like, yeah, you've had 12 years with her, but you're also always kind of with her too.
Yeah. I like, there's another moment that's really good the way they first play it. When the daughter shows her the picture that she has from school, and she's like, oh yeah, it's from our teacher said we had to make a TV show, and they show the picture, but like, you don't even really register what it is. You're like, oh yeah, it's a picture of like a man and a woman. And it's not till later that you realize that, and they show this to you in the middle after you've already seen Jeremy Renner and Amy Adams in the ship with the canary. And she shows the picture and you're just like, oh yeah, it's a picture or whatever. And then it's like, it's not till later that you really think, oh yeah, you can pick up there that this is that this takes place after all those moments, not before. When
right. And the bird that. Too, is not the animal they're talking to. Yeah, it's like they're talking to the aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the way that sets that up really, really well. And I'm glad this movie does a good job of, it doesn't need to answer the questions that it sets up. Like I don't, cause it's not the point. The point is, it is very much more of a specific character.
What are your questions?
Well, like, cause we don't find out like what is the big thing that's supposed to happen with the aliens in 3,000 years, but it's not, but that's not the point of the movie. That's just in the background. You're supposed to focus on Amy Adams. But I do like thinking about that of, you know, apparently the weapon or the tool that they give them is the ability to perceive time like they do. And we see, she writes her book and she teaches class. So I guess it's assumed that like, they're going to keep spreading that, like more and more people are going to learn how to think non-linearly and experience their lives that way. Like they're all going to eventually start doing that. And that's the weapon that they all need to have. So it's like, what's the big thing in 3,000 years that they need Earth to help them with, is an interesting question that again doesn't need right. to be answered, but it's interesting to think about. Like, are they going to get attacked by like another alien species that they know is going to attack them, and they know they need help from somebody? Or
the thing I like about it too is it doesn't seem like they need humanity necessarily to have that ability. They just need them to get, they need us to work together
as a whole unit. Yeah.
So when they show up, we have to be working as a planet, which yeah. if you think about it too, when you get into sci-fi things like Star Trek, each planet seems to be like a colony, but it's that planet. And Earth really seems to be like universal. Earth is Earth. There is no more, like, they're not really, you know, they'll split up like a Picard. He's in France right now on his vineyard.
Yeah.
But for the most part, Earth
Federation. Yeah.
Yeah. It's looked at as a whole. And I've always really liked that concept too, because this movie puts you like right there with that question of like how we deal with something when we're not communicating to begin with. Especially like the aliens, it's sort of like how are you going to take them on? And I don't even, there's a lot of questions. Like, I don't know what they would do if they did destroy the aliens, then, or they tried to fight the aliens. Does the aliens die or something? You know what I mean? Did they fail their mission? I don't see them being like, we're going to destroy the Earth. Just whatever their plan was, you're not going to understand it. You're never going to get the answers.
Yeah, that's how I took it. Like they were there just on like a peaceful mission. Like basically, yeah, if China would have blown up the ship that was above their area, then they probably would have just left or something like that. Like the rest of the ships would have just disappeared. They wouldn't have tried to attack the Earth. They just wouldn't have stayed.
Right, and then like when the ships go farther up in the atmosphere, it makes me, not when they're fully leaving, but it makes me think of chess or something. Like, this is it. This is the final move. Like, if you don't figure it out, we're gone.
Yeah.
And I kind of do like the idea too of the concept of time, of how important something is, even if it's in a time that you're not living in. I mean, think about us going back in time even a couple hundred years, where we're talking about language again, where we live in the United States, we all speak English, which is from Europe, from the British coming over here, not even the native language, which I don't think there was one like solid Native American language.
All the tribes would have had their own language.
Yeah, a lot of smaller language and stuff. But we're definitely a foreign language. That's why, like, Australia also speaks English. And I kind of like that idea, too, when you're watching this movie. They seem to communicate more directly with Australia. And I kind of took it as, well, we both speak similar language. You know, yeah, we speak the same language.
The easiest to communicate with.
Yeah, so you're the easiest that we're going to go back and forth between. But also, there doesn't seem to be that trust, yeah. You know? And I feel like it's probably they don't trust the United States, which also makes a lot of sense. We're not the most trustworthy people.
Yeah.
But then, weren't they talking about colonization in here? Where they talked about...
she gives them that story about the she kangaroos. Makes up about kangaroos when yeah. the when the original settlers got to Australia yeah. with the Aborigines. And yeah, that's... And Forrest Whitaker... gives her like the classic line that's in like all the different sci-fi films. It's like, well, don't forget what happened to the Aborigines when they got there, when the more advanced, you know, people got there and almost wiped them out entirely.
Right, which is why I think a lot of people, it's a really interesting movie to come out in 2016 too, because we went through that whole Trump era of people like not wanting to be not communicating and wanting to be very close-minded. And they're afraid of what they don't know, and they're like they're afraid of people that speak a different language. Well, a couple years ago, I went to Japan, and I remember my mom being like, "Don't get hurt," like she was worried about me. And I'm like, "Do you understand where I'm going? Like, I'm not going to the Middle East, or you know, I mean, anything could happen to you anywhere."
Yeah.
I mean, in Southside, in Southside of Pittsburgh, where me and Chuck live, there seems to be a shooting almost every weekend now.
Yeah.
Or how we'd always be in the movie theater, how many movie theaters get shot up? Or recently, there were people that were found dead that went to go see the Forever Purge. You heard about that?
Yeah.
And the most interesting thing about that story was they found them when the guy went to go clean the theater. So, like, they didn't even notice it. Probably because it's all shooting and stuff anyways.
It was probably just loud anyway.
But, yeah, like, I don't necessarily think, I don't live in fear. But I don't think that the United States is, like, this safe haven that people actually think that it is in their mind.
Yeah. There's just as many places that you can get murdered in America as you can in any other country.
Yeah, they get terrified. I had somebody that was talking about, you know, you don't really want to get into it, but Border Patrol. And they're really afraid of, like, rapists and murderers getting through. And I'm like, well, what about the rapists and murderers that are already here? There's, like, nothing happening with them. You're the same people that don't want anything to change with firearms. I'm not saying to be, like, regulated 100%, but, like, you know, if somebody's saying they have mental illness, maybe, like... don't let that person get their hands on a gun. Make it a little bit harder for them or something. But yeah, that fear does translate into this movie too, because whenever China and a couple other countries, Russia and stuff, are already, they declared war on them, basically the United States were told, well, you better arm up, because even if you don't want to, you're probably going to experience some sort of retaliation from these aliens. And, yeah, there's that fear. Like, even when Amy Adams comes back down from the ship, when she had her last, like, big communication with the aliens, and she was able to speak the language and understand the language because she understood enough that she was able to break through that nonlinear time, her focus is on trying to stop what is happening right now with this attack. And it's like juxtaposed to the tanks that are rolling down the hill and like lining up to ready to like shoot this. I mean, I don't even know if they could really destroy these ships.
I mean, that bomb didn't even really do that much damage other than it killed one of the aliens.
Yeah. Yeah, you are right. But that was actually kind of cool too, because it had that moment of like, it had that hero moment of self-sacrifice for this alien,
yeah,
that really doesn't have much personality besides the language it speaks. You don't ever see any sort of facial expressions.
Yeah, they don't have faces, and that's what the that's what they say about their language, that they view it as like an art form, which that kind of makes me think a little bit of Japanese, like how you were talking about learning that, and the way that really any of the languages that don't use like the standard alphabet that the Western countries use, like Japanese and Chinese and like Russian characters, especially you see like the Japanese, that is kind of like feel like an art form that I've seen with like some of them, like that they get really good at actually like memorizing all those symbols, and you know, having to being able to like paint them by hand, and like sometimes it's only changed by like, you know, one dash on the side, like suddenly makes it mean something completely different. But it is actually like an art form with them. Whereas,
I mean, they have like three written languages too. So, many, yeah. So it's like, once you feel that you're understanding it, it kind of gets into what I would consider Spanglish. It's like a combination of both of them. Or as my one friend Tim pointed out when we were over there, he showed me a picture from when we were there, and he's like, you know, this I understand pretty well. This, I have no idea what they're doing. And then this, they're like focused on trying to make it real cute, and I have zero idea what it says.
Yeah, that's a weird. I've tried a long. It's been a long time, and I never tried with Duolingo, which is what you and me are using. I tried with like a different program before, but it kind of like it went over that. It said there's the kanji for like the actual original, like Japanese kanji, but then they also borrowed symbols from China, and then there's also like a modern version that they added new symbols mm-hmm. to over like the past however many years. And yeah, it's like it's kind of like how you're saying, it's like, and sometimes they'll just combine all of them in the same thing, and I'm like so you gotta learn like three different languages just to put this one thing together.
Yeah, and it's sort of like they have like a shorthand. I don't know how to describe it yet, but it's like, okay, this is really complex, but this means sensei. Because yeah. You're going to be saying it a lot, so you need to know
You better know how to say sensei.
Well, you learn how to say it like longhand, and then it's like, by the way, you're never going to see it written this way. You're going to see it written this way. But now you know how to do it in the simple way, in the more complex way. Yeah. But, yeah, even like how you said, like a little dash or something that you can't see because the font is too small. Completely different letter,
yeah,
and very easily a completely different word.
Yeah, and that's how they bring it up in this movie. She says, they say something the one time, and Jeremy Renner's is like, "Is that new? I can't even tell." And she's like, "No, it curls a little bit more on this side or something." Like, it's very slight in how it changes it. Which I don't know. There is something interesting, and I agree with like that idea of. The more and more you try to immerse yourself into learning a different language, it does kind of like start rewriting your brain to a certain extent that you start to, I mean, obviously that's the whole point of getting fluent, is that you can read a sentence and you'll translate it in your mind immediately, even though something like Spanish, for example, can get confusing where they put the adjectives after the word. So instead of like the brown shirt, mm-hmm. it's the shirt brown. If you like yeah. directly translated it and things like that, or just no means any kind of negative. It yeah. means don't, didn't, shouldn't, and just put no in front of everything.
Japanese does the same thing. And then there's also politeness that you have to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Spanish has the same thing where they're like, this is the formal way. If you don't know someone, you need to say it like this.
Yeah, that's what I ran into, because it taught me how to say things, and then it was like, you know, ask this question, and I would, I'd phrase it the way that I learned, and be like, no, this is how you say it. And I'm like, well, what's this extra stuff? And it's like, oh, it's just formal. Just makes it formal. You don't want to be rude when you talk to your sensei.
Yeah, yeah. That's how it is. It's like, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's a weird thing, because that's what I've heard. Like I don't blame people when, like how you were saying before, like the people that complain about people coming to this country, and I still get from time to time in at work, we have some ads and things that like will play over the loudspeaker, and it plays them in Spanish, and I'll have like the person that's like, why are they playing Spanish? Everything needs to be English here. No one wants to speak Spanish. And I'm like,
you don't even speak English buddy. Yeah.
But that's my first thought is kind of seeing it from the opposite direction of learning Spanish and then thinking of people trying to learn English after Spanish. Every other language has like such like a solid foundation of rules for like this is how you will always say this. And then it's like you get to English and it's just like, I don't know, you could kind of just like throw words in whatever order you want and you'll figure it out. Like someone will get it. And it's like,
the same word has three different meanings depending on how you say it.
Yeah, that's the same thing that I'm just like. Like, I feel like it's one of those things of like, I don't blame people if they come to this country and then try to figure out English. And they're like, no, what rules are there? Like, what's your big rule? I before E except after C. Like, that's your big grammar rule that you got.
Yeah. I mean, I had that when I was in Japan too, where they laughed at me a little bit, but it didn't seem mean. Where this woman was walking out without her umbrella. So I grabbed her umbrella and I gave it to her. And, you know, she's like, arigato, which is thank you. And I said it back instead of like, I don't even think I knew what you're welcome, was. So I just said, like, yeah, arigato. So like, I sounded to them like, yeah, thank you. Here's your umbrella. Thank you.
They're just like, what an idiot.
They giggled. No, I think they took it more like an endearing kind of way, but like laughed because they're like, oh, you said the wrong thing.
That funny, stupid American.
At least I was trying, you know? I think when I was over there, I only had three phrases, but I was talking about Japan at work, and I was talking about like how they're ahead in a lot of ways, too. And my boss was like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, for example, the way that they tackle like recycling and being able to reuse things. And here it's like we're like living in a heap of trash. Or their infrastructure's like, so they're clean and their infrastructure's wonderful over there. Like they just continuously build on things. And then if you're driving through Pittsburgh, you're going to see a ton of potholes. You're going to see bridges that are just like taped off. Like don't go across that bridge. I wouldn't do it.
It could go at any moment.
Yeah. We had somebody look at this bridge and we thought it was a good idea to not let you go across it anymore. But yeah, it's just sort of like, I don't know. I think that we lack in education, and it's nice to be able to learn something. Because I don't really feel like I've been learning anything the last 10 years.
Yeah.
At least not in the sense of like, I really have no concept of what I'm getting into and now I need to learn it.
Yeah, that's kind of what like, I don't know, it's what made me want to learn like a new language is... Also, just, I don't know, you get, like, jealous listening to people that are from, like, Europe, and, like, it's very common for people to speak, like, three or four languages over there. Like, people that are in France also usually know English, French, German, Spanish. Like, obviously, all those countries are a lot closer than we are. Like, you know, the size of those countries put together is the size of, like, five or six states over here, so... There's not anywhere we're just surrounded by more America, so that's all we care to learn. But it's like that's such a common thing over in Europe is like, oh yeah, they speak like four languages.
You're 100% right, because when I was in Japan, we met this punk band, Feedback Cyclone, when we were in Shinjuku, and they said, hey, you want to come see us? And they were actually playing like the night before we were gonna come back to the States, and we said, yeah, sure. And then when we were there, the one guy's girlfriend was French, and she was fluent in French, Japanese, and English, if not more.
Yeah.
And it was funny because it's just like, I remember her saying like, I can't do the accent, but it reminded me of something from when we did the Before trilogy. And, she said something and she's like, I'm from France. And my friend Tim's like, you can't even tell. And I'm like, yes, you can. Like 100% sounds like she's doing the French accent.
You made me, I was about to bring it back to the Before trilogy too, because that was my first thought again of the Americans with like when they first run into the guys in Vienna in the first film, and it's sprechen Sie English? And the guy's like, oh, you could try German for a change. Like the same way of like, I don't know, maybe you could try learning a different language instead of assuming that everyone else needs to speak English all the time.
That's a thing too that my dad always told me when I was growing up. He was in Germany for a while, and he said that like if you try to speak the language, they would kind of respect you and let you speak English. But if you didn't even try, like yeah, they hated
if you just
it.
Automatically assumed and were like, "Hey, speak English to me."
So he'd say like the only phrase he learned was "un Bier bitte," which is "one beer please," yeah. And he's like, "That's it. That's all I learned to say the entire time I was there," and. You know, they were satisfied with just that. There you go. I'm speaking German, too. I didn't think that was going to happen on the podcast. I spoke Japanese, English, and German on this episode so far.
Nailed it.
I didn't say anything real complex, but I'm like, damn. Three languages. There you go, Chuck. Just spoke three languages. Nice. But yeah, this is I think this is also a science fiction movie for people that don't necessarily like sci-fi. You might be turned off by the fact that like aliens, because that's that's what we're dealing with here. But I think it's more personal than anything else, and it fits in that connecting theme.
Yeah,
and I think I'm really happy with the theme that I chose. Because this is a movie that I really wanted to do. I feel like I cheated because I was like, what are the similarities between Arrival and Big Fish? Like, how could I get them together in a single month? And I think I came up with a better theme than had we done Aliens, what we would have been doing. We would have been probably doing Alien, E.T., Close Encounters or something. Mac and Me, maybe. I don't know. We could do Mac and Me sometime.
Well, one day we'll do. Well, that'll be our alien theme.
We could do product placement movies or something.
Movies made to sell products.
I don't even know what Mac and Me was trying to sell. Like,
I think it's McDonald's.
Well, McDonald's like and Coca-Cola whole, and
yeah,
stuff.
They have
and...
like a whole scene where they're just hanging out in McDonald's for like 15 minutes or something. They name the character Mac.
Yeah. Yeah, but I meant in more like the way that this alien, they slapped it together like so fast that it's not even like cute.
Yeah.
And it's like trying to sell McDonald's. Like, it doesn't bode well when your characters are aliens on a form, like, I forget where they're from, Mars or something, and they have straws. They should make a Mac and Me sequel. Where they come back, but there's no straws anymore because of, the environment. Yeah. They come back to McDonald's, their favorite spot, and then their straws are deteriorating, disintegrating. As long as they have that kid fall off the cliff again in his wheelchair.
That's all we need.
The classic Mac and Me scene, I think. Yeah. See, you never know where you're going to go when you start doing a new episode. I'm enjoying where we're going with this so far, but
yeah.
Yeah, just picked a kind of out there theme, but I felt like we've had some pretty good discussions lately, so definitely go back and listen to our other ones in connecting. I really liked our Misunderstood month. The Before trilogy was very good too. I think Apes, we even had some pretty good conversations.
Yeah, I thought we got some good stuff on Apes.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the last couple of months, like, we've had some pretty good episodes, minus the fact that, I mean, you can hear crickets right now. makes it more exciting for us.
It's more authentic.
Yeah, we've been doing our podcast remotely for easily a year now. I felt it was, like, mid-August or late August when we came back and started doing episodes again for the first time, like during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a lot safer, but we suffer from the fact that we can't have that sound quality that we used to have. And obviously when we came back, we were just kind of doing some fun themed episodes, not necessarily talking about a particular movie. And those ended up being kind of like our worst sounding episodes. But we had to like relearn It's kind of like learning the new language. We had to learn the language of a remote podcast. And there are like tricks that you can do that I think are pretty cool that you can't do live. But the environment is way less controlled when you're doing it remotely. Like, you cannot, you know, my dogs bark or something, and it's not like we can go down into my basement and kind of keep them, like, content.
Sometimes we lose our guests.
What do you mean?
Not like we literally lose their connection.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if they were physically with us and it was just like you turned over and you were like, right, Sean? Oh, he's gone.
My favorite is when we had Spiker on, and he was talking about, it's really funny, we lost him, but when you listen to the audio where we lost him, we're totally ignoring him, like nobody can hear him, and he's like, guys, my battery's dying, guys, I'm so sorry, gone. Guys, and he's just out of the picture, and then we discovered that the audio was not lost, and we were able to edit it together in a way that didn't sound off. There's a lot of times where we have things where we mix it and you can't tell. And then there's other times where the podcast sounds terrible, like we just like cut out something and we literally did nothing. We just made it just sounded awful all by itself. But I don't really have any other final thoughts besides just definitely seek out this movie if you missed it. It came out late in 2016, and it was up for the Academy. Like, it was like one of the 9 movies, and it kind of got glossed over in that sense. And I also think, like, when Blade Runner came out, which also didn't do well in theaters, which is, like, why I think that Dune is not going to do well in theaters, even though it's, like, you have a lot of nerds that are very, very excited about seeing this version of Dune. I can also see it being like appeals to nobody. They're like, I don't want to watch this weird movie where everybody's on some desert planet with giant worms. You know, it's just a weird concept to begin with.
Yeah.
But we have to go through everything. And this one, yeah, emotionally, it hit me in a place that almost all these movies have. Even the ones that you picked were not in the foreground of my mind, but definitely were like, there were so many impactful moments in Fisher King, and same with Her. Her was something that I really enjoyed and never watched again since it came out. And I thought that a lot of the things still stood out.
Yeah, I enjoyed all these films that we talked about. I thought... I don't know. Yeah, it's one of those things you kind of just throw out an idea of connecting, and you picked your two, and I came up with mine. But and I think even doing them in like release date order, I think worked pretty well. You kind of started off from, you know, the smallest of, you know, two friends meeting and connecting, all the way up to literally the entire world needs to connect.
Yeah, we did move up in the scope of things that way.
The scope keeps getting bigger. Bigger and bigger. Get a little more futuristic with Her, and then, you know,
you have to get a little bit more sci-fi.
Yeah. It keeps getting more more fantastical as you go along.
It is actually kind of interesting because it had like, it started with like the only fantasy was like kind of within Robin Williams' mind.
Yeah.
And then it went into like the fantasy got bigger, and then the science fiction got bigger and bigger.
Going full on aliens.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That was never the plan to thematically grow.
It just worked.
We should try that one time. We should try to, like, cater a new style of our theme. I think when you see it, you're like, connecting? The fuck does that even mean? It's just, I think it's about understanding.
Yeah.
It could have been called understanding. You had misunderstood, and then we had understood. But connection, yeah. I kind of like the idea of, like, you have to learn to kind of step outside your comfort zone. And I feel like even though that's in this movie is, like, one of the major themes, I think that that's something in real life that you should take and, you know, use. Apply it to real-world situations.
Yeah.
See, I don't get to talk real all the time. Sometimes I'm just like, I liked that. That was exciting, wasn't it, Chuck? And you're like, oh, yeah.
You get that.
Best part of the movie. It's a different thing when you talk about something that you're overly excited about because of, like, the action or the way that the scene is structured. And I think we've been able to talk a lot more when things have been a little bit more brainy.
Yeah. Well, we've had some good ones recently. I think we'll have some good ones coming up, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty excited about everything. We plan out pretty far in advance, so we're, like, planned all the way through the beginning of November.
Oh, yeah.
That November one is funny, too, because it's been planned for 5 years now. It has.
I know.
It's our longest planned episode, and it'll probably be just like the rest of it. But you never know. Anyways, we're Cinema D'Amore. Thank you for listening. We're at Cinema D'Amore on Twitter. I'm at JJMorgan19 on Twitter.
ChuckFinn66.
/ Cinema D'Amore on Facebook. That's where you want to follow us for all our cool ads that we have and let you know what's coming up next week. Because we have a brand new theme next week. And from an audience perspective, there's another communication thing kind of going on.
Oh, yeah.
But again, thank you for listening. It's really appreciated. We're glad that you're still with us. Or just discovering us. That's nice. Because what is our skills? We're just two dudes talking.
That's it.
Change the name of the podcast. Just two dudes talking. Thank you.
Thanks.
We are Cinema D'Amore. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It would be greatly appreciated if you subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.